Welcome to a brand new episode of the Borderless Voices podcast presented by the FCJ Refugee Center.
Welcome to Permission to Exploit, a Borderless Voices special series focusing on closed work permits and labor exploitation, presented by the FCJ Refugee Center.
Permission to Exploit, the system behind the exploitation of temporary foreign workers. When your immigration status as a temporary foreign worker depends on your employer, power shifts. Permission to Exploit is a podcast that combines lived experience specialists and professional specialists' insights to examine Canada's closed permit system and the reforms needed to make it safer. In the first two episodes of Permission to Exploit, we will discuss how workers get trapped when they enter the system. Episode 1, Recruitment. Promises versus reality. How jobs are sold abroad, misinformation, debt, and power imbalance before arrival. This sets up everything that follows. We are here today with Mega, who experienced workplace labor exploitation right here in Ontario. Today, we're going to ask her a few questions about what her recruitment process was like and hear from her about her personal lived experience. Mega, before you agreed to anything, what were you hoping life in Canada would look like, and what did you think the pathway would be?
Hi, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk. So basically, I came to Canada as a student with like a lot of dreams, and I believe that this is a country where if I worked hard, I could build a safe and stable life. I wanted to support my family and become independent and eventually get my permanent residency. I imagined a future where I could live without fear and dignity. With dignity and respect. That was the one I was hoping when I eventually came to Canada.
Got it. And how did you first connect with the person or company who promised to help you get a job and a work permit?
So I came through one of the TikTok video. It's a consultancy in Mississauga. And they had a video where they'll be supporting with the LMIA because I was not sure about what LMIA is actually, but I only knew one thing that people who have an LMIA can get a work permit and stay in the country. I did contact few other consultants before, but everyone was asking me for a large amount of money. So this person with whom I contacted saw the TikTok video. I did send them a message and I contacted over the phone, and they asked me to come to Ontario from BC. So I came here and I met that person. So it was basically through a social media.
So you were in BC at that time studying, correct?
Yeah, I was in BC. I completed my studies. But then because of my personal reason with the financial thing, I was not able to collect my transcript. That's where I got stuck, and I had to find a solution for me to stay here. That's when I came across the TikTok video, and then I contacted them because the video was like so promising and it was giving a hope that I'll be able to stay here, stay in Canada.
And so was that the same? Was the consultancy the same people who got you connected with the job?
So what happened is like I came and I met the consultant lady, and then they told me that, okay, you have to give us like 2-3 days time. We're going to find you an employer. We have a contact with few employers, and whoever is ready to, accept the temporary foreign worker now, I can send you to that place, and then the process starts. So they asked me to initially pay for them, right? Because without paying, they were not ready to give me any details. And they did ask me to sign a contract, but it was like an empty page and just a signature because they said that they were not prepared for me. Like when they asked me to visit them, I was given an appointment, but they said that they were not prepared that I'll be visiting them. So I signed the paper, and my consultant is the one who found the employer for me. And I never had no contact with the employer, no interview or anything at all. So it was everything with the consultant.
Got it. And so how much did you have to pay before they would even reveal the information about the job?
So first I had to pay $3,000 and they asked me to pay that in cash. So I paid the money and I signed the document and they asked me to submit my whatever the credential that I studied before. I submitted my documents, like a copy of them, and then I came. After like 3 to 4 days something, they asked me to come and visit the employer from Mississauga to Bowmanville. So I came and I visited. And the employer just wanted to see me. Basically, I had no interview or anything. They just wanted to see me. And they were like, come and work for a few days. And if we feel that you're capable of doing the work, we will continue with this one. So then I went back again to Mississauga.
So they wanted you to work for a few days for no pay just to see if they would want to be
Yeah.
interested in you.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I came and I worked for like 3 days, and then they were like, okay, we feel comfortable that we are okay that you might be capable of doing the job, so we are going to hire you. And then when I started to talk about my pay and everything, they said, we are not going to discuss anything with you because you came through a consultant, and that is the person who will be discussing everything with you. But eventually, like, I was already stuck in a situation because I paid the money and I was not having a place to live. I was book I mean I booked the room in the Airbnb, so I had like very little funds to survive myself and my husband. I had no other option other than saying yes for anything they're saying to me.
So, what exactly were you promised about the job, the hours, the pay, and how safe or secure your status would be?
So they promised me that I'll be getting a full-time job since the day I start working. And then they said they'll be paying me like the minimum wage or just a little bit above that, but I mean they did not tell me how much it's gonna be because they said that they are not sure about that, how much they want to pay me. So I just started to work. And then they said that they'll be helping me with my papers for my permanent residency. I was like, okay, let me continue working in this place. So initially, my consultant asked me to pay $15,000, and I'm like, may I know why I have to pay this much money? Then they said this is like the processing charge that you're supposed to pay. And then once I gave most of the money, then she kept adding the things up and saying like, you have to pay more, you have to pay more. So I was already stuck and I kept borrowing from here and there all the money, taking the loans and everything. And when it comes to the job, like the main thing was they offered me the full-time job and they said that they'll finish my LMIA and the work permit process as quickly as possible so that I'll be able to work for a year and then get my permanent residency. That is what they promised me.
And you trust this consultant at the time. Why?
The main reason for me to trust them was that they were from my country. That was my first thing because I never thought that my own people is gonna put me in a situation that I'm going to get into problem at all. So that was the main thing. And they had like a lot of TikTok videos, views and everything. So that was like too much promising that, their reviews and all the Google reviews and the way they were making the videos and promoting them, that was giving a lot of hope. That was the main reason to trust them.
And did you receive anything in writing, either from the employer or from the consultant, contracts, receipts, financial breakdowns, or was most of it handled by phone or verbally? I remember you mentioned that you had to sign a blank contract, basically.
Yeah, so because they said that like they have not prepared a contract under my name, they said that to sign the document like the completely empty document, and then they'll be sending me through the post because I already came from Mississauga to Bowmanville. But the days passed on, they were keep delaying, and I also did not force them because I know the more I asked them about anything, it's the more that I was gonna get into trouble. So I did not have no contract, no receipts, anything. Most of my communication with them, like I can't even talk in the phone. I have to go visit them in the consultancy, and I cannot carry my phone inside when I go. I have to leave my phone outside.
What kind of trouble were you worried about, if you asked too many questions?
So they said that they'll not be, continuing the processing of LMIA. I'll be losing my job, and they'll call the immigration and they'll deport me. This was like they were always like threatening kind of thing.
And that was just if you asked any questions, they said
Yeah,
that.
and anything like because I already paid them the money, and when I asked like how long is it gonna take, because so when I came to Ontario, like I was on my implied status for my postgraduate work permit, which eventually got rejected. So after that, like I was left without no option. Like it, I was just on the visitor record, and then they forced me to work during when I was on my visitor record. Like, you're supposed to work because my passport was with my consultant first, and that was then given to my employer. So I had no passport with me for me to go out of the situation.
Sorry, so just to be clear, you were made to give your passport first to this consultant, and then this
Yeah.
consultant gave your passport over to your employer.
Yeah.
And did you ever, I did you ever get it back? Did they give it back to you eventually?
Yes, I did get it back, but it was like after nearly 2 years of time something, because I came here in 2022, and then 2023 they made me to work for like a year without paying me for anything, and that is the time that I was on my visitor record, and they did not pay me. They just forced me to do the job, and they said that this is a volunteer job so that I don't have to worry that something will happen to me, like when it comes to the immigration. So my passport was between my employer and my consultant, and when I asked them, they said that once the process is done, then only I'll be getting that one because they have to send it to the immigration for stamping.
Wow, they kept your passport for 2 years.
Yeah, nearly 2 years.
And you said that initially they had you working as a volunteer.
So when my postgraduate work permit implied status got rejected, I had to stop working. And then I told my employer that I have to stop working because I'll not be able to continue working. The immigration has sent me a refusal letter, and they said, you don't have to worry about that. You can still continue working as a volunteer where you don't get paid so that, you get used to the job. And I had no idea what they were saying. I trusted them, so I just kept working. Like eventually, like I was doing full-time hours of job without getting paid for it. And they said that is my volunteer job and I can use that for my experience.
Was there ever a moment, during this time when you realized that the situation might not be legitimate or that the costs were escalating and getting too high? What happened?
So what happened was like a customer once when they came to the store, this is a pizza store, right? They placed an order online, and whatever the order I got, I just made the pizza. But actually they selected the wrong sauce and I had to make whatever the order I got. The customer threw the pizza on me. So I called my employer and I said like that was a hot pizza, but it did not actually fall on me, but they throwed it on me. I just moved. So I called my employer and I said, this is the thing happened that I'm gonna call the cops because I don't feel safe that the woman was like too arrogant towards me. And my employer said, no, you cannot call the cops because your situation is not like other people. That's when I got to know that I was trapped, that I was not supposed to work there as a volunteer.
What was the rationale for volunteering at his pizza shop? Did they ever explain that?
They said that, because my LMIA was still under processing and I was not doing any other job, or just because I was not able to do any job. And they said, like, if I don't want to do the volunteer job, that they'll call the immigration on me and say that I worked without without having the work permit here, and they're gonna put me into the trouble. Because when I got my refusal, I worked for a week, right? Like when they told me that I can work as a volunteer, and then they took that as an advantage, and then they started to threaten me, like, if you don't continue doing this, we will not return your money, we will not return your passport, and there is no proof that you gave us your passport, so you cannot do anything to us. That's what they always said to me.
Looking back now, what were the biggest red flags or warning signs that you wish you had seen or you wish someone had told you about earlier?
The biggest red flag were the pressure and the urgency for the money, and they were like not transparent about anything. Like, so initially they told me that they already applied for my LMIA, but they did not apply. They were just delaying so that I continue to work without getting paid as a volunteer. So they said my application is submitted, and next time when I'm asking, they said no, we are still arranging the documents. They were just delaying my process. Only was requesting the money in emergency, and they were pressurizing me. Like I was emotionally so down. I had no one to talk to, and I had no one to tell, like, this is the problem I'm going through in my workplace. And they made me feel like I did not act quickly. If I did not act quickly, I would lose everything. And I wish someone had told me that no genuine process works like that.
When the payments, they kept asking for more payments. How did they explain that to you at the time?
So every time that they ask me for the payment, they're like, we have to pay this to the government. If we don't pay, they will not process your application. So you have to pay us, then only we can pay to the government. I'm like, can I get the receipt for that? They said, yes, you will get the receipt only at the end of the process, because you'll not be getting the receipt for every single money you give us. You only get it at the end. So because I want my process to be done quickly and I want to start working, that was the reason that they were like, always making it like a rush that I have to pay the money, if not the process will be delayed.
I see. How did the financial pressure, the loans, the loans from family and friends, any family money you had, your savings, how did that affect the choices that you felt like you had to make next?
And like, I had taken a lot of loans and used all the family savings and borrowed the money from the friends. The pressure made it very hard to step back. Like, I already like I mean like I came here, and when I'm taking the money, I was telling to them, okay, I'm doing the process like this, so I have to use that. If I decided to step back, that was too hard pressure on myself, and I felt responsible not only for myself but for my family's sacrifice for this. That fear pushed me to continue even when I had doubts. That was like emotionally and mentally, I was not okay because I owe a lot of money, because that was not like less money for me to take from someone and pay to my consultant.
I see. And last question, is there anything that you'd like to say to anyone else out there who might be in a similar situation right now to the one that you were in?
I would like to tell one thing, that if something is genuine, they're not going to force them, and they're not going to ask hefty money like that. I do understand the consultants charge the money for the processing, but when they're asking something like $15,000, $20,000, it is like a kind of scam that they're doing, and not to believe them and apply for the job, which is posted online, contact the employer directly rather than going through the consultant. In case if someone is asking the money for you, even the employer, don't follow them. Just save yourself from that situation.
Thanks so much, Mega.
Thank you.
We're here today with Gabriel Aladua. He's an author, an activist, and a former migrant worker. Welcome, Gabriel.
Thank you for this wonderful opportunity.
When listeners hear your name in this episode, what is the one thing you'd want them to immediately understand about your work?
That being a migrant worker in Canada, you don't have the same rights. You're vulnerable, you're in precarious, you're in difficult situation, and there's some people who are willing to provide help and support.
And can you quickly explain how are job and work permits typically sold to migrants? Through recruiters or consultants? And where does misinformation commonly enter?
Jobs and work permits are often sold to migrants through local recruiters who go directly into rural or isolated communities in their home countries. These recruiters are frequently relatives, friends, or trusted community members who are hired by larger recruitment agencies based in cities. These agencies often have partnerships with Canadian-based agencies. Because migrants rely on the information provided by these trusted local recruiters, misinformation or misleading promises about jobs, wages, and working conditions commonly enter at this stage of the recruitment process.
And what does it mean when a worker is paying these really large fees for an LMIA or for a job offer? Why does that become such a major risk factor?
An LMIA is the employer's responsibility, and workers should not have to pay for it or for a job offer. When workers are charged large fees, the job and permit are still not guaranteed. Many migrants take on heavy debt or sell land and property to pay this cost, putting both themselves and their families at serious financial risk.
Lately, we're hearing more and more about recruitment happening through social media. What vulnerabilities does that create, especially for newcomers under time pressure?
Social media allows recruitment agencies to reach many people quickly in the Global South. While this expands access to information, it also spreads misinformation and unrealistic promises about jobs abroad. Many migrants fall victim to fake agencies that take their money but provide no real job or migration pathway.
What are the most common recruitment tactics that are used to create dependency?
Many agencies charge workers up to $10,000 in so-called consultant or processing fees, including LMIA, work permit, or job finder costs. Workers often arrive already in debt and must repay these fees through wage deductions. Some contracts also include large penalties if workers quit early. This debt pressure makes workers more likely to accept abusive conditions.
We've been seeing that most people will assume that these fees, these massive fees, are legitimate, especially because they're seeing multiple different consultancies or agencies quoting them similar numbers. How is this able to happen?
Recruiters often present themselves as immigration consultants and claim the fees are for legal or immigration services rather than recruitment. In many cases, recruitment agencies and consulting firms operate together or share ownership. Workers may sign contracts with one company but pay fees to another, making the process appear official and legitimate.
What protections or enforcement mechanisms exist around recruitment, around recruiters and consultants, and where are the gaps that still exist?
Recruiters and consultants are supposed to be licensed, but rules vary by province, making enforcement difficult. In practice, there are few effective mechanisms to hold agencies accountable for illegal recruitment fees. Workers often must file complaints with regulatory bodies or take cases to small claims court, and very few cases have successfully recovered monies for workers.
Why do you think that is, that the money rarely gets reclaimed in these courts?
Because it's very difficult for workers to prove evidence, and that is where the gap comes in. We trust those people, but we lack evidence, lack paperwork, lack paper trail, and not having evidence. Word of mouth is nothing, and that is where the workers fall short of proving, being able to prove and be successful to recover the funds.
And these agencies tend to know that, and they take steps to prevent the existence of evidence, correct?
Yes, that's right. Because in Canada, no news is good news. So we trust these people, we trust these people. And they were referred by a friend. And so many workers have traveled abroad and we don't hear the challenges they face. So we assume everything is successful. We assume that we're coming to that perfect place where everything is working well. And not knowing that it's because of unjust laws, unjust policies, ignorance, and a culture of silence and fear, workers have to be forced to be quiet. And in our home countries, we interpret no news as good news.
If you could give anyone listening a quick recruitment checklist, what would be the top warnings and the safest next steps you would suggest? Like, what should they make sure is the case when they're working with a recruiter?
There are several things I would like to encourage potential migrants to consider when approaching or when dealing with recruiters. Some of the top things are, one, be cautious if asked to pay more than $1,000 to consultants or recruiters. Number two, ask for a clear breakdown of all fees and what they are for. Number three, be wary if fees are charged for things like job offers, LMIA, or job placement. Number four, if agencies refuse to explain fees or responsibilities, treat it as a major red flag. At a broader level, stronger policies are needed so that employers and agencies share responsibility for illegal recruitment fees, and workers have clear understanding of the mechanisms through federal and provincial labor systems.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention about these recruiters, consultancies, or any related issues before we sign off for the day?
Yes. There, in many countries, like especially places like the Philippines, there are many, many, many recruiters. And they continue to spring up as Canada expands expands programs that bring in migrant workers. Because over the years, many, many workers have come to Canada and have been successful in changing their lives. A lot of people in the sending countries, they assume everything is okay and it's a smooth path, it's a straight line, no problems, right? However, there have been lots of challenges of recruiters over the years, but it's so easy for them to re-emerge under new names and still continue the difficult process of basically ripping people of thousands and thousands of dollars.
It seems to me that the line between legal and illegal fees is not very clear with the way it is now.
Yes, that is very, 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 very common, that the line is very blurred. And in my opinion, the government has done very little, I think, to empower workers, educate workers. For example, in the work permit that's supplied to the worker, that's a great communication tool to the worker, a work permit. But instead of it empowering the workers, in the event that you abuse, call this number, what they tell you, not authorized. Is that empowering or disempowering? And because it's so disempowering to the worker, it really serves like as a loophole to the employers. As one person said, an employer in Toronto said, "I feel safer, I feel more protected as an employer than as an employee." And that is where the imbalance of information, the asymmetry of information is. And the workers are always left in that difficult, vulnerable, and precarious position.
Well, thank you, Gabriel. This has been great. For many workers, exploitation doesn't begin at the job site. It begins the moment a pathway is sold as the only way to stay.
Thanks for listening. To never miss an episode, subscribe to Borderless Voices at fcjrefugeecenter.org, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.